Welcome back, another edition of Baltimore Positive. This time we have moved actually into Baltimore City. How about that?
Johns Hopkins University, one of the finest universities in the nation.
Three episodes in and we've already got complaints about not being in the city. So here we are.
We're
at Johns Hopkins University today. Right. I want to make sure we clarify that. And I'm going to let you do all the honors here, Don Moeller. Go ahead.
Well, this is the easiest introduction we'll ever have. Without a doubt, there's no one that will be watching or listening that does not recognize our guest today, Senator Barbara Mikulski. Senator, thank you for being here so much.
Don, I'm very glad to be here. And though we're here where I'm now a teacher at Johns Hopkins University, we could have just as easily done this down at Lexington Market or hung out at Fadley's or either been in Harlem Park or Locust Point. So, but welcome to the city. And three cheers for you with this new positive podcast that you're doing.
Well, we are trying. We believe, Senator. Nestor and I believe we started talking several months ago. We just think it's such a great city that gets such a bad rap. We talk all of the time. Nestor, he traveled, even when you travel the world, not only the United States, people's image of the city is the wire, and we tell them nothing could be further from the truth. Does the city have challenges? Of course it does, but it also has these incredible assets, and as someone born and bred Baltimore City, Highland Town, the bakery, the city council, nobody has been more invested in Baltimore City than you over the years. So when you sit here now and you work with students and you're the longest serving woman in the United States Senate, I mean, what an honor. I mean, it's just incredible that this young lady from Highland Town ended up really making history. So when you look back on your entire career and you look at the city, how do you see the city today? What do you see in front of the city?
Well, first of all, let me tell you what I'm doing,
and then there you go.
Because people ask me this all the time. You know, when I said I wasn't going to run again, I felt there were two reasons why. Number one, I had served; I was the longest serving a woman in American history, and I thought it was time to make room for new leadership. In other words, turn the page. But I wasn't ready for my final chapter here. Mm. That's not Senator Barb. So I also said in my remarks was that I wanted to focus not on the next election, but on the next generation. And Don, I am so impressed with this new generation. As a perennial, I sure like meeting the millennials. They are fantastic. Where the perennial meets the millennial, you can see their ideas, you can see their idealism, but they aren't always sure how to get things done, how to go from protest to policy, how to get from moving into a neighborhood to make their neighborhood and all neighborhoods a good place to live. So I like teaching here at Hopkins, and I'm also on the board of the community foundation, and I'm working with City Hall on the census. But I'd like to talk about all of that. But when you talk about the city, sure, we see the wire. It put Baltimore on the map. But like Martin O'Malley said, where's the movie about leaves falling down and so on? But you know what? You know where the true Baltimore is in the neighborhoods. The true Baltimore is in the spunky, plucky, resilient neighborhoods. And what I love about Baltimore is the neighborhoods, where neighbor still does look out for neighbor, where we had more investment in neighborhoods, all of the neighborhoods, not just a few zip codes of prosperity, and how we also then look ahead to how we can raise all boats. And that's also why I want to talk about the census. But it's the people and it's the values. And what are the values? The values are, you know, to be a good neighbor and also to participate in the community as a good citizen.
You know, that's a thing. It's interesting, isn't it, Nestor? As we sit with the senator, we had Dutch on, we had Malia Cromer. The concept of neighborhoods is really becoming a theme, and the strength and the richness of these neighborhoods. I mean, it's just everyone is
talking. Well, my neighborhood was held together by sports, right? So, I mean, all these years later, I do sports for a living. My family came because of sports and the Orioles, and we've invested a lot in sports. But sports was the way, you know, in my neighborhood, it was season to season.
Sports was it for the boys.
Fair enough.
You know, and it did a lot. You know, our very good friend Ted Venatore.
Right.
We joke because he was part of the Red Shield Boys
absolutely.
Club up there in Highland Town. And sports also, not only our great grand teams like the Orioles and the Ravens, but it was really the little leagues.
Sure.
It was the bowling leagues. You know, while the guys went maybe to the big sporting events, a lot of sports occurred in neighborhoods, and it was that league activity. And then, of course, in East Baltimore was the bowling leagues. And
duck pins?
A block away from her place. Come on, man. Well, there are no other bowling balls but duck pin balls, right, Barbara?
Absolutely, if I could digress. So, you know, even though I've got kind of a large mouth, I have small hands. And the regular bowling ball, I mean, my God, you might as well give me a cannonball at from Fort McHenry. I can't lift the blankety-blankety. But you give me that little duck pin, and I made duck soup out of these.
Nothing feels better than a strike, does it? I mean, there's nothing quite like when you
a bowling strike.
That's right.
Not a Bethlehem Hills strike.
I bet you we're probably a few of the people that can still remember Pin Busters. Do you remember
I was on Pin Busters.
The TV show where people would throw in
Royal Parker. Come on.
Duck pins. Everybody.
I want to jump back before we get too far in. I want to come back to your current role and working with young people today, because you said perennials meet millennials and good things happen and there are ideas and there's energy. Millennials get this rap that they don't care about anybody but themselves, that they're all about me, me, me. They don't vote. They're not engaged. And what I hear you saying is, hey, Don, that's not what I'm seeing here. Talk to me about the millennials working with.
It's not only here at Johns Hopkins. You know, Baltimore is really fortunate to the incredible higher education we have. If you just look at, starting with the University of Baltimore, up there off of Mount Royal Avenue, you come down Charles Street, yes, there's Hopkins, but there's Notre Dame, there's Loyola. You bump right into Towson University. There is Morgan, there is Goucher. We're the home to preeminent historically black college like Morgan, to Coppin, that's had some bruises, but nevertheless is a comeback school. And our independent colleges, whether it's Stevenson, I won't go through the list. But when you are out there with the young people, first of all, on the good side, is they want to know about the world and they want to change the world, but they wonder, can they have faith in the institutions and the institutional leaders that we have? So that's one thing. So when you say, they don't. Well, you got to give them a reason. But the other part of that is also they want to know about the world and they want to change the world. But at the same time, they're facing incredible, crushing student debt. And we've got to do something about that. If we could really crack the problem of the student debt and how to make it achievable and affordable so that our young people can pursue majors and so on, that's their dream, whether it's a business degree from one of our great schools, Baltimore, Loyola, Morgan, we could go through it, Towson. We could unleash creativity. And the other reason they don't want to buy a home is when you're that deeply in debt from your student loan. You know, anyway, so that's a big issue with them. The other is, though, they really look at the disparities in our society, and they would like to close those disparities. And they say, well, I marched. I got the sweatshirt. Why haven't we eliminated poverty? And those are very good questions. And this is why we engage them and talk about the economy we see today and the economy we see tomorrow.
which is a real challenge. I think back when you talk about the economy today, the economy of tomorrow, and it being in transition, all the way back to when you were on the city council in the early 1970s. Maybe you can talk a little bit, and maybe we learn from that going forward. What did you do as a member of the council? Because you talked about the millennials feeling disengaged from their leaders, that they want to feel that their leaders care about them, that their leaders are focusing on the same issues that they care about. You came out of a background of being an activist. You were a social worker, a community organizer. You end up on the city council.
Once a social worker, always a social worker.
I was going to say, you took that till the day you left. You know,
born again do-gooder.
And you never, well, and we're going to talk later in this podcast about how that born again do-gooder amassed election totals that in this day and age really I can't even compute because the way you brought people together. But let's jump back. When you were on the city council, and I think you've had a lot of friends on that city council. Some were there for a very, very long time. What did you do? What did you see as your role as city council person?
Because I think when we talk about Baltimore City. The early 70s, correct? This is after the riots, right? So how did what happened in 68, how did that affect your activism at that point in the world?
So in 1968, Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated. It was just a terrible, terrible tragedy. And Baltimore had its upheaval at that time. And people worked to try to not only quell the disturbance, and I was working as a social worker for the Department of Social Services. I actually helped. I was part of a team that helped Baltimore respond. That's too long of a story to tell. But when it was all over, and we were thinking about our community, I actually thought about going getting a PhD to be ready for when we would get a Democratic president, and I could be a deputy assistant coordinator at Health and Human Services. Along the way...
Now this was Nixon era, correct?
Yes.
Along the era that some friends came to me who were also social workers and said, look, they're planning a 16-lane highway to come through the urban ethnic neighborhoods that you grew up in, you know, St. Casimir's, St. Stanislaus, the whole O'Donnell Street, Lancaster Street corridor. And over on West Side, it's going to go through Sharp Street, Leadenhall, and it's going to go through Rosemont, the first African-American home ownership in Baltimore. Remember, Baltimore was a segregated town. We can never forget that. And also, it was not only segregated geographically, it was very hard for African Americans to get a loan. But through the GI Bill, many of those tremendously wonderful veterans had access. So they asked me to come to a meeting at St. Stanislaus Church. They were afraid to buck the machine. The machine wanted the highway because they felt it was going to be jobs in construction. And yet, people weren't getting real value for their home. They weren't getting relocation benefits. And I said, let's organize. We could fight this. And that's how I got started.
Wow.
But it was
saving your neighborhood, literally.
But it was a coalition because, you see, we didn't give a flying feather about the highway. The why we wanted to build a highway to get people out of the city or through the city to save the city was beyond me. That was the downtown boys making top-down plans. Top-down plans! And looking at neighborhoods as if they were disposable. The other side of the tracks. Who in the hell lives there anymore? Well, a lot of people live there. A lot of people live there. So that's what was the organization. That was the coalition. And it was a citywide coalition of the neighborhoods affected, along with people like the Preservation and Historic Society, lawyers, people from whatever. But the interesting thing was, I lost before I won. So, yes, I organized. The politicians did not listen to us. We talked about why we wanted to save our neighborhoods. Well, we saw that from our friends and neighbors, not our neighbors, but our friends over in West Side, they hadn't had a new school in over 50 years. And guess what? Highland Town hadn't had a new school in 50 years. Did they want a library? We wanted a library. We had a bookmobile. It was great. Right. We had the library.
I used the bookmobile. That's why I
turned this part. We had the library in Canton, but we had the bookmobile. I love the bookmobile, but it wasn't a library. So our coalition, which was SECO, Southeast Council Organization, and our fight against the road, SCAR, Southeast Council Against the Road, we went neighborhood to neighborhood listening. So by the time I ran for city council, I knew every neighborhood. I knew every neighborhood's problems, and I knew every neighborhood's aspirations. Most of all, I knew their aspiration, and I wanted to put in the perspiration, and that's why I ran for city council. But let me get to losing before I won. So I won, and I introduced the repeal of the route of the highway. Schaefer was mayor, and
was he supportive of the highway?
He loved the highway. He thought it was what the downtown people did, and he saw all the torn up warehouses and all around Pratt Street, which is now the Inner Harbor. So came time of the vote, and I had learned from reading, knowing about the D'Alessandros and Councilwoman Victorine Adams, may she rest in peace, said, if you get to 10, you're a success. If you don't get to 10, because there were 19 of us at the time, you lose. So anyway, the day of the vote, after a 14-hour hearing and all on it, Schaefer called me, Barbara, I'm going to have to roll you tonight. A man of few and blunt words. And I said, well, Mr. Mayor, I think I've got the vote. And I'm all like Mary Poppins. I've got the vote. I'm going
to
win.
I'm new to this.
You know,
I got this.
I've got all these promises. And I got to be said, I'm going to roll you. But when I beat you, which I will, he said, only one mayor at a time. Admire you keeping your campaign promise. But I'm the mayor. You're not the mayor. You can't run the city. So I walked into city council Monday night, 5:30 vote. My very dear friends in the world were looking at the ceilings. They were seeing if their shoes were tied. Dear Victorine Adams came in from a sick bed. They brought her in a wheelchair. And I knew that seeing Vicky, Councilwoman Vicky, was the train, the light at the end of the tunnel was the train coming towards me. So I lost the vote. I only got 3 votes. Mine, Bob Fitzpatrick, and Wally Erlinski.
Crushing. So, in effect, Schaefer rolled you.
He did.
As he said he
but
would.
But then I called, and I said, Mr. Mayor, you made your point. You are the mayor. But you got to know why we're fighting. We don't give a damn about the highway. What we care about is Baltimore and the neighborhoods. The story, and he said, you talk like Embry. Come up and talk to me. So we went up, and we had, and it was the beginning of detente. Arms control. Highway control. But that's when he and then Wally, God rest his soul, really looked at it. And guess what the solution was? Put it under the water. Instead of running it through the neighborhoods of the European ethnic, they were going to level Federal Hill as an engineering obstacle, which was one of the reasons of our historic lawsuits. It's the Fort McHenry Tunnel.
I'll be darned.
We put it under the water. You would not have that whole area if we did. But then became the Inner Harbor. But then what was happening? By the time I ran for my second term for city council, there were, you know, signs all up with zip code 24. Zip codes, which was East Ball, you know,
I grew up 24. Yep.
You grew up in 24. Zip code 31. Okay. Over on West Side, it was the same. People were moving from Edmondson Village, and there was this new dream place called Columbia, and people were looking at that from West Side, where African Americans were going to be welcomed in a new way.
Right. Jim Rouse's vision?
Mr. Rouse. And who taught me the 3 R's of economic development. And which
we're all
is,
getting our notes out.
I'm going to say, you're going to tell us what those 3 R's are, right?
Visit and keep what you've got. Look at what can never leave, like water. things you've chosen never to leave, like our great universities. Can you imagine in 1968 if Hopkins and University of Maryland and Mercy would have left the city for both jobs and what it meant to us? But what is here and what's going to stay? But anyway, while we were working on all of that, so that's when we began to work on the solutions. And but again, it was also, though, it wasn't only going to be Gucci pavilions. It was also going to be the neighborhoods. Now, Schaefer started with, you know, and by the way, the council was very active. You know what Rodericks called us then? The pothole parliament. Isn't that great?
That's a wonderful
term. That sounds like Dan.
Though, right?
Yeah.
But that was the beginning. But unfortunately, economic development did not get much farther out. So we made big investments in the harbor. We made those big investments in sports and stadiums. But what happened to, we forgot to invest in public school construction. It's not that we forgot. I was being sarcastic when I said that. So we needed to have school construction while at the same time we had stadium construction. We needed library construction at the same time there, you know, while they were building baseball diamonds, which I support, we needed to support the diamonds in the rough, which were our schools, our libraries, and our local parks, because that's where so many kids went and played and whatever. So,
my family always talked about my stepbrother taking his first steps at Patterson Park. Every time we take the number 10 by there, my dad would say, Jeffrey took his first steps in Patterson Park. And I'm sure, yeah, I mean, the fact that we have that kind of a park. When
and
you
the
go,
parks are still being used, and this is where we need to really support them. I believe that we need to support the places where people can gather, where they don't have to pay $35 for a cheeseburger and, you know, $35 to park. So you go by Drude Hill Park, and you see the family reunions there, in addition to the wonderful Baltimore Zoo, which is a lot of fun, you know, Zoo Mania and all the great things they say.
Don
and
Hutchinson, that's for you from the center.
No, we're at the zoo this week. This week's the big week there.
I know the PETA people might not go for that, but also what you see is the family reunions.
Right.
Oh, my gosh, are people having fun. The other day when I was over in Highland Town on Eastern Avenue, the Creative Alliance, that the old Patterson movie, put on something called the Kite Festival. They do this in other cities. If you would have seen Patterson Park, African Americans, the Latino community, Caucasian community, gentry from Canton, all in the park, and you saw a lot of guys, because in many cultures, kite flying is very masculine because you have to build it and launch it. It takes a lot of upper body to get a kite up. And everybody was having fun. People were out there. There were families. There were kids. And there was like a social glue to it. This is the city. You know, plucky, having fun, but neighbors, that took a lot of organizing from Creative Alliance and the neighborhood organizations that supported it. So I'm not saying festivals solve it. We need jobs. We need to get ready for the economy that's already here. So let's go to blue-collar jobs.
Well, can we hold on right there? I want to come back.
I
want to come back to blue-collar jobs. Wonderful place to take a break.
Highland Town, blue-collar jobs. What we have here?
Kite Festival. People. And
got a shout-out for my Latino friends in Highland Town.
All
beautiful.
The cultures coming together. There was no doubt that when we had the senator on, we would get to the core of Baltimore Positive. So after this break from Johns Hopkins University, we'll be right back.
Mikulski for mayor. That's all I have to say. WNSC, Towson, Baltimore. We're back for more right after this.
You don't want to get that rumor started.